Thank you, Jessica Riddell, for taking time for me today to be on Moving Thoughts.
It's my pleasure, Michael. Thank you for having me.
You're a relatively new teacher at Bishop's University, about 2 years, is that correct?
That's right.
So, what are your roles at Bishop's University?
Well, I'm a professor in the Department of English, and I teach courses that cover about 1,000 years of English literature. So I start with Anglo-Saxon heroic poetry and end at the end of the 17th century. So in my capacity as a professor, I supervise honors thesis students. I run a seminar series called STEP. I've organized a national undergraduate conference for English students called QUEC. And I'm the co-founder of a program called Graduating Gators that supports student athletes as they transition into university. So I've got a lot of different roles in my capacity as a professor at Bishop's.
Could you briefly describe the STEP program?
Sure, Michael. STEP stands for Student Seeking to Excel Program. It's a seminar series that I developed and is hosted by the Department of English in collaboration with other departments and faculties at Bishop's University. And the objectives are to ensure that our students have the necessary skills to succeed first within their undergraduate program, and then once they leave Bishop's for grad school and or when they enter the job market. So it's designed to deliver the core competencies at the heart of a liberal education. This semester, for example, we've run seminars on essay writing, punctuation, academic integrity, how to apply to grad school. We have a number of seminars coming up in November on waste management, repetition, redundancy, and effective writing, etc. We filmed the sessions this year, and we've uploaded all of the videos onto YouTube. If anybody is interested in watching these videos, they're really fun. There are links on the English Department website under the STEP page. If you're interested in attending, these are welcome to the entire public, the community at large, as well as Bishop students, faculty, and staff. They happen on Friday afternoons at 1 p.m. in Nichols 310, and we'll be running them throughout the winter semester as well. So I highly encourage everyone out there to come and see experts in their fields delivering topics on things that are really life skills, oral and written communication, effective writing, etc.
Could you tell me more about the Graduating Gators program?
Sure. This is a program that's pretty near and dear to my heart. I founded a pilot project in collaboration with Jock Phippen, who is the fantastic director of recruitment and retention at Bishop's University, last year. And we called it SAM, which stood for Student Athlete Mentorship Program. We started the program because we were dismayed about the poor retention rates for student athletes. We understood that student athletes often have additional time, upwards of 40 hours a week, for games and practices and for going on the road. So on top of an already demanding course load, they also had these extra responsibilities. And so we tried to figure out a way in which we could enhance their experience and support them as they transitioned in, through, and graduated from university. So we started it with a group of 30 student athletes last year, and we delivered a number of different sessions and seminars. This year we've expanded it with the help of the new Dean of Student Affairs, Dr. Jackie Bailey. We renamed our program Graduating Gators and made it mandatory for all incoming student athletes. So these series of seminars that happen every other Friday afternoon are intended to provide students with the information, skills, and resources that they need to thrive, not only in their sport, but also in the classroom. One of the things that we constantly try to really encourage athletes to think about is how they have skills that transfer from their success on the field or on the court into the classroom. So they already are really high achievers. They know how to have discipline. They know how to be competitive. They know how to take constructive coaching and feedback and work it into improving their game. And so we're really trying to identify those characteristics and strengths that they have already and make them think about how they can apply that in their academic life. It's been a really rewarding experience so far. We've got a group of about 80 incoming student athletes. It's been very enjoyable. And we have mentors, and our mentors are made up of faculty, of staff, of deans, of senior administrators who sit down and have one-on-one sessions with small groups of these student athletes.
There's always a story when coming to Bishop's. Everyone who's here at Bishop's has a story of how they heard about it, how they eventually came to be. Could you tell us your story of how you came to Bishop's?
Well, I was an undergraduate at McGill in the 90s. I'm not going to tell you when in the 90s, but I dated a guy who went to Bishop's, and I was often down on weekends in the Eastern Townships. I remember feeling envious of his undergraduate experience, particularly the sense of community and camaraderie that I didn't encounter as a student at McGill. I was part of a class of probably 1,000 or 2,000, and I didn't get to know any of my students. I didn't get involved in any clubs because it was a really intimidating experience. And so when I came down for weekends, I was amazed at how many things my boyfriend at the time and his friends were involved in, the fact that they hung out with their classmates, that they went to sporting events together. I even traveled all the way to Halifax for the national championship game in basketball in 1998. I went to the Metro Center. I wore a big Bishop's sweatshirt and cheered on the Bishop's Gators as they finally, as a little tiny school that could, managed to win and take home the trophy. And I really felt like I was a Bishop student in many ways, even though I was masquerading as one as a McGill student. So then I went on to go for graduate studies. I did my master's and my PhD. I went to Queen's University in Ontario. And then I got a job as a full-time professor at Concordia. And I loved my experience at Concordia. I found the students and faculty to be really wonderful and engaging. But when I was at Concordia, I didn't feel that my students had the best quality of education because they didn't have the appropriate level of access to their professors. So when the position opened up at Bishop's, I jumped at the chance to work in an environment that focused on strong faculty-student interactions. And the reason why I love this institution so much is that it focuses on learning and extending learning outside of the classroom. So I have a chance to engage with my students in a number of different forums and venues. So I have them for 3 hours a week in the classroom, but I also have them for my conference committee meetings, for my STEP seminars, for sitting down in small sessions with student athletes. I see them on the field for football, for rugby, for women's soccer. I love being able to engage with my students at Donald Lecture Series and at Centennial. So even though I wished I had gone to Bishop's as an undergraduate, I feel like I've come full circle and I have an even better opportunity, even more rewarding experience to be a professor here because I get to deliver the kind of education that I wished I'd experienced throughout my undergraduate and graduate career.
Now, I know this sounds a little bit of a loaded question, but what is your favorite class to teach here at Bishop's?
Oh my goodness, that's like asking you if you have a favorite child and you have six children. I love all of my classes for different reasons, and maybe I'll outline a few of them. I really enjoy teaching my intro to lit class because my students are fresh, they're eager, they're coming out of high school or CEGEP, and they're really teachable. They're really fresh-faced, and they sit there in the front row, and their hands are constantly shooting up. And they're encountering these ideas often for the first time. They're making these really incredible connections, what I like to call light bulb moments. And, you know, even though I have the challenge of teaching intro to lit, which covers from the 8th century Anglo-Saxon heroic poetry up until the 17th century, I really enjoy it because I'm constantly challenged to really show my students why we read these old dead white guys. And I really believe that we should be reading these old dead white guys. I'll give you an example of a class that I taught just this past week. And it was called Petrarchan Poetry and the Innovation of the English Sonnet. Now, it sounds like a snooze-worthy class, and my students probably felt a little bit intimidated. But what I did was I introduced Petrarch, who is a 14th century Italian humanist, and his innovation of the sonnet form in a way that gave them contemporary correlatives. So not only is Petrarch really influential on early modern writers like Thomas Wyatt, Christopher Marlowe, William Shakespeare, he also has had a great influence on contemporary songs. So what I did was I played a number of songs and asked my class to identify the Petrarchan scenarios in them. So for instance, I played Barry Manilow's Copacabana as an example of the Petrarchan motif of celebrating where the lovers first met, to introduce them to the blazon, which is the isolation of a body part of the beloved as a celebration of her beauty. I played Sir Mix-a-Lot's Baby Got Back. So I had a great time playing. I played about 6 or 7 songs, and some of them have a series of Petrarchan scenarios. And at the end of the class, my students came up to me and said, you know, I'm never going to forget these because I'll have Barry Manilow or Britney Spears or Sir Mix-a-Lot in my head as I try to think of these scenarios. So it's really quite an entertaining experience for me to show them that, you know, they're reading 14th, 16th, 18th century poets and playwrights, but these ideas and these motifs are circulating and very, very, you know, present in their own experiences and lives. So I love my intro to lit class. I also love my smaller upper year seminars. So the intimacy provided for a roundtable discussion and the luxury of a careful analysis of big texts.
So how big are usually these seminar classes?
Oh, my small upper year seminars range from 6 people to, I have a huge one this semester, 16, which is really, really large at Bishop's for an upper year seminar. And we really get to bat around all of these big ideas or big texts. So we looked last year in my 17th century poetry and prose class, we took an extended view of Milton's Paradise Lost. So the 6 students in my class really got to go book by book and immerse themselves in the language of this huge epic, the story of Adam, Eve, and Satan. This year, I'm teaching 16th century poetry and prose, and we're spending a month on Spenser's Fairy Queen. So this time, this luxury of careful analysis of a small group discussion facilitates these light bulb moments for my students. They really come to these ideas after an organic and digestive process where they really approach the text with great insight, great knowledge, and great confidence by the end of the semester.
Most professors and teachers at Bishop's not only teach classes, but also engage in research. Could you maybe describe some of your research projects?
Great, I'd love to. My research focuses on 16th century drama and its relationships to politics and performance. I was just awarded a SHRC grant, which is the Social Sciences and Humanities Research Council of Canada. And so I got a bunch of money to explore a new project. And this project is arguing that Queen Elizabeth I's succession in 1559 disrupted the way in which masculinity was formed. Aristocratic and civic groups relied traditionally upon the model of a king to fashion their own masculine subject formation. And with the accession of Queen Elizabeth, we have a female as the apex of political power. And I argue that this shift precipitated a crisis that radically altered the definition of masculinity that was so carefully constructed in early Tudor culture. So people like Henry VII and Henry VIII and even Edward VI were consistent models of masculinity that men could look to and say, well, you're an ideal man because you hunt, because you wrestle, because you joust, because you write poetry. I can emulate you in my small way, whether I'm a civic or aristocratic man. So during Elizabeth's reign, drama, like plays, tournaments, and masks, played a crucial role in negotiating the ever-shifting relationship between queenship and English manhood. And in this project, I theorize that Elizabethan courtly drama provides an especially well-documented intersection between politics, performance, and power. So this crisis of masculinity is really being registered in these various art forms, in performance. An example that I always use is that in the late 1570s, Elizabeth goes on a progress, and she goes up to the north of England, and she is treated to a number of plays, orations, masks, tournaments, etc. And one of the plays is called The Death of Manhood. And so an allegorical figure of beauty, who is meant to represent Elizabeth, is being courted by three models of masculinity: manhood, favor, and desire. And they're all in some ways caricatures of masculinity. So manhood is the chivalric man. He's the brawling knight. He is the one who is really good with his sword. You have favor, who is the courtier who knows how to flatter his mistress. And you have desire, who is the favorite, the one who is really interested in political campaigns. And so these three caricatures of masculinity vie for the attention of beauty. And what happens at the end of this play is that they descend into a brawl. They get into a big fight and they blow each other up. And the play ends with literally limbs and arms of these men raining from the sky, and a doleful song for the death of manhood. And what I suggest is this example, and there are a number of kinds of plays and orations and pageants that are registering this masculinity crisis, that men are no longer adequate enough in the face of this female sovereign. And what is so interesting about my project, or what I think is so interesting about my project, is that there are strong correlations to contemporary culture. And it's not an isolated moment in the 16th century that signals masculinity crises and the negotiation of female power in politics. So we have in the US, for example, Sarah Palin, and she employs the medium of reality television to claim credibility via her roles as mother, hunter, and warrior. I don't know if anyone has had the dubious honor of watching her Sarah Palin Alaska series, but she has, and unfortunately, I watched it as research. She goes hunting with her father. She goes fishing. She teaches her child how to walk. She is invoking all of these registers of femininity to give herself credibility as a political presence. And in some ways, this is not unlike the roles ascribed to Elizabeth I. Elizabeth I was an excellent performer. She really liked to embody different roles at different political times. So she would alternately refer to herself as a king, as a warrior, as a virgin, as a mother of her people. And so this kind of dynamic use of various roles in order to gain political power is not only important in the 16th century, but it also has contemporary correlatives in our current political culture.
So for that project, you went to Europe to do some research. Could you maybe explain or describe the experience you had?
Certainly. I went to England for a month this past May to conduct archival research. And the great thing about being an early modern scholar is I get to go to England, I get to go to several beautiful archives, whether they're in California at the Huntington Library or the Yale Beinecke Rare Books Library in New Haven. I get to travel and I get to look through manuscripts and printed books that are 400 to 500 years old. So this past May, I went to England and I spent a lot of time at the British Library. I also went to the Bodleian Library at Oxford and the Wren Library at Cambridge. And I must say there is nothing more exhilarating than handling documents that have been touched and read and thumbed through and annotated and scrawled through by people who've been dead for hundreds of years. You really feel a true sense of intellectual kinship to your literary and academic predecessors.
So you said at the beginning of the interview that you set up Queck. Could you describe Queck in more detail?
I'd love to. Queck is one of the most rewarding experiences I've had as a professor. Queck stands for Quebec University's English Undergraduate Conference, and it brings together faculty and students from English departments across Canada. And our mission statement is to showcase undergraduate research, provide students with early opportunities for academic professionalization, and to extend learning outside of the classroom, which is what we really do well at Bishop's, providing them with a stimulating collaborative milieu that is safe. Often undergraduate students work in isolation, right? They work at their desk and they come up with their ideas and they pass in their paper that is only read by their professor. And so what this really seeks to do is to create a collaborative environment where you're no longer operating in an isolated vacuum. You get to present your research, you get to talk about it, you get to ask and answer questions about something that is often a very isolating experience, especially in your undergraduate. So I started Queck 2 years ago. Last year, we had representation from every English department in Quebec and 16 universities from across Canada. This means that we are the only national undergraduate conference in Canada, and it is a delightful experience. Every year, the presenters and participants and contributors demonstrate intelligence, enthusiasm, professionalism, and a desire for collaboration that for me really encapsulates the heart and soul of lifelong learning. I always tell my students that my peers, my academic contemporaries, could learn a lot from their professionalism. You often go to academic conferences and you deliver papers. Sometimes you get really mean questions. Sometimes nobody shows up to your panels. And it's really, in some ways, not a collaborative environment. At Queck 2010, 2011, and upcoming 2012, it is such a vibrant experience. People are raising their hands, they're engaging, they're collaborative, they're respectful, and it really does raise the hair on the back of my arms to see how professional, how intellectual, and how engaged these students are. We have Queck 2012 scheduled this year in February, the 24th to the 26th, and it promises to take the conference to new heights in the pursuit of knowledge. We have a new theme this year, and it's called From Darwin to the Beatles, Talking About Evolution and Revolution. And so it's really suggesting that evolution, revolution, and even transformation is present in our everyday life, but these are themes that have been examined and interrogated and represented in literature for the last millennia. And so I think it's going to be a really rewarding experience. It's open to the community. It's open to Bishop's faculty, staff, and students. And we're even extending our invitation this year south of the border to our U.S. Neighbors. So I really see this as an exciting, growing, an amazing experience.
And if people want to learn more about Queck, where can they go?
Well, they can go to the English department website at Bishop's University. They can go onto the Queck page. So you can go and you can read the online publication that we did for the conference proceedings from last year's conference. We selected 25 of the best papers that were presented. We edited them with an entirely peer-reviewed student editorial board, and we've just published it online. You can see the schedule from last year. You can find out how to register for this year's conference. The conference includes everything from panels and sessions to a plenary speaker and a poetry slam, which caps off this really exciting conference. So all of the information is on the Queck webpage. I mentioned STEP a little bit earlier. STEP also has videos online that's also on the English department website at Bishop's. So go and check out this really vibrant place, receptacle of information.
You're the faculty advisor of the local chapter of Golden Key. Could you maybe explain what Golden Key is and what their initiatives are in the community?
Absolutely. I love Golden Key. Golden Key is an honor society that is internationally recognized. And it celebrates the students who get in the top 15% of their academic discipline. And so you have some incredible members and honorary members of Golden Key through an international network. And it's the only group on campus at Bishop's that celebrates academic achievement. And after all, isn't that what universities are all about? Really making sure that there's a kind of intellectual engagement in every aspect of one's experience. And the three pillars of Golden Key, I think, are really important values. Not only are they academic achievement, but they also emphasize service to the community and leadership. So Golden Key members at Bishop's volunteer for STEP, the Student Seeking to Excel seminar series I talked about earlier. They also act as mentors and volunteers for graduating Gators and football study hall. They volunteer at the Women's Shelter. They run initiatives like Better World Books. They facilitate debates and seminars that engage with our Bishop's community in really exciting ways. So it really encapsulates all of the things that I love about Bishop's and I love about learning, that kind of intellectual engagement, but also the ethical and moral responsibility to give back, to be a global citizen within your community, both within the university, locally, and internationally.
Thank you very much, Jessica, for coming on to Moving Thoughts and sharing your thoughts with us and your research and all the other things you do. So have a good day, and thank you for being on the show.
Michael, thank you very much for having me, and I look forward to being on your program again.